My guest today is Caroline Goyder. Caroline's a leading international voice coach, author, and keynote speaker on the subject of gravitas and finding your voice. These are the two titles of her books. She worked at the Central School of Speech and Drama as a voice coach for over 10 years before launching her own company. She has over 15 years' experience providing voice and gravitas training to people of all ages, including celebrities, teachers, broadcasters, and people in the corporate sector. She's regularly sought after by the media as an expert in her field, and her work has been featured on television and in numerous national and international newspaper articles. Her extremely successful TED Talk has had over 6 million views, and Caroline was named by Red Magazine as one of Britain's top coaches. I'm really excited to talk to her today. Caroline, I'm really delighted to have you here today. Thank you so much for making the time in your very busy schedule. I know you're about in the midst of a book launch, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But first, I'd just like to have a chat about your career, yourself. How did you get into voice coaching and create such an expert space for yourself in this area?
I'm like the maths teacher at school who couldn't do maths and had to learn and was then brilliant at training people who also couldn't do maths to understand it. Because I left Oxford and went to drama school and was told, you have no resonance, you have no presence, you're not present on stage, you're not listening. And I just felt that was me. It was identity level stuff. I was just bad at this. And over the last 20 plus years, I've just unpicked what they meant. And I've understood that actually that's not identity level, it's behaviour, it's skill. And so I teach people that if you want to speak with confidence, you have the capacity, you just have to learn to do it. It's a bit like learning to drive. It's that simple.
And I know you are a firm believer that everyone has this ability within themselves. It's just a question of finding it. But why are our voices still so important in this day and age when everyone's got their faces in their phones and we correspond by email and WhatsApp? Why is our voice and what we say so important?
It's funny because voice really is just us, isn't it? You can't separate voice from identity because voice is breath. And that sounds a bit, you know, voice coach, doesn't it? But actually, Jeff Weiner, I don't know how you pronounce it, he runs LinkedIn. And he spoke at a Wired conference and said that his belief is that persuasion and the voice that persuades is more important than coding.
Really?
As a future skill.
Wow.
Because so much of what we do at work is about persuasion. Mm. You know, when machines can do almost everything, the point about the human is that we're able to listen and understand other minds and persuade.
That's a really interesting point, actually. And one of the things I'm often asked is around, we talk a lot about the wanting to negotiate flexible working. And somebody said to me just last week, oh, you know, I've got my appraisal coming up. I think maybe I could just email my manager and tell them I'd like to talk about this. And I said exactly the same. I said, no. This is something exactly as you're just referencing, this idea of persuasion. And it has to come from you as your person, as your breath, as your breathing. Yeah, very interesting. Why is it something that so many women in particular seem to struggle with? Or is it? Do you not see that so much?
That's a really interesting question. And I have half an answer, which is that I do see men and women who struggle with speaking with confidence. But my sense is that the system, the world of work currently, is still designed for the male voice. Mm. And, you know, I have clients who'll say, I'm still the only woman in the room. And so what may be going on for men, I think, is seen as less of a barrier to their success. So if a man is a bit quiet and a bit nervous, I think still it's less of a barrier than a woman. And when you look at electability of women, you see that borne out. You have to be much better still as a woman to become elected. I train people, candidates for selection, and the women who get through are often far more polished than the men because they have to be.
And do you think this big, thorny, huge subject of imposter syndrome, again, just my own personal experience seems to be, it's far more, women who seem to feel that, especially in the workplace. And there's lots of data around how women will look at a job description and say, well, I can't do that because I can't do every single one of those bullet points. Whereas a man will probably be able to do about 50, but say, hey, heck, I'm going to apply anyway. How does imposter syndrome affect us and our voices and in terms of what people see and hear?
Well, here's what I think about imposter syndrome, that pretty much everyone has it to some degree. And I hear men and women, the higher they go up the chain, the more likely they are to have it. So in some ways, it's actually a signifier of success. So in lots of ways, when you feel it, welcome it, because that's a sign that you're just needing to exercise the confidence muscle a little. However, that doesn't help you if it stops you speaking up in a meeting, or if it stops you saying yes to the conference, or stops you, you know, as you say, applying for the job. So there's some really good work by a woman called Tara Moore, M-O-H-R, on this. And I love her book, Playing Big. She's brilliant on dealing with inner critic, dealing with imposter syndrome. And there's a technique that she teaches, which I've seen work brilliantly for women and men with imposter syndrome, where you visualize your future self in about 10 years' time. And you see that self, the ideal future self in 10 years' time. You see that self in a really lovely place, dressed in the way you want to be dressed, surrounded by the people you want to be surrounded by, looking out at the view you'd love to look out of. And then you ask their advice. And I notice often that with clients, that just takes their focus out of the current worry about how am I showing up, and gives them a sense of possibility of where they can get to. And I often say, show up as that future self. What if you already knew that? Yeah. What would be different?
That's so powerful.
I love it. I've seen it work.
Idea. Yeah. Yeah. I know you've got lots of these tips and tricks of your own. I loved your TED talk where you had the chest of drawers and you talk about opening each drawer and what's inside. What can we do to put the lid back on these voices in our heads that are there telling us, you know, you sound stupid, you can't do it, what are you doing up on stage, what do you do with your hands, where would I start? I've got a big meeting, I come to you, I'm full of nerves, what's the first thing you'd tell me?
So the first thing I would say to you is that nerves are normal, they show you care. So normalise what's going on for you. Probably everybody else in that meeting, everybody else going up for that job has some degree of nerves. And then what I would do is get you more into the body, because so often, and I've been there, you know, when we live in our heads, when we process everything cognitively, conceptually, it's very easy to switch on a voice that says mean things to you. And I was taught by a neuroscientist years ago that the attention system is really limited. I can either be in my head talking to myself, or I can be in my body, feeling my feet on the floor, feeling my bum on the chair, feeling the air on my face. And in coming back to the body, to my sensory perception, I have to shut down the internal dialogue. And I suspect it's no coincidence that actors spend a lot of time in their training really learning to be embodied. And so I'd say to someone who was feeling nervous about something, come back to your body, come back to your breath, switch off the head and be firmly in your senses and notice how the brain goes quiet. Their needs with your needs, then why would they say no? Why would you say no that to something that also helps you?
And how much is what we say important versus how we say it, and the, you know, the body language and the tone of voice, all of those things?
Oh, I mean, I think that the body, there's the old study, isn't there, which is that about 70% of what we say is the body language. And I think with moments that matter, where we are influencing, your tone, your pace, your breath, your state is so important. Because And this is, there's a nice bit of science around it. This is called vagal tone. The vagus nerve is the longest cranial nerve in the body, and it connects to the gut and also the larynx. Now, when I have high vagal tone, I go around the world and I have a sense of being amongst friends, being safe, and I look for signals of safety. When I have low vagal tone, I'm out there and I'm looking for signals of threat and danger. And if I can look after my vagal tone, which is a lot about the breath, the body, my calm. When I go into that meeting, which should be a face-to-face, as you say, then I'm going to have an ease and an openness and a responsiveness that's not reactive, that's not defensive, that doesn't put that boss, that stakeholder on the spot, make them feel bad. We're so much more likely to say yes to someone who makes us feel at ease, who isn't reacting to us.
And that makes perfect sense, because there are, we all know people who seem to just breeze through life and get what they want. And they usually seem to have, whether that's learnt or whether it is genuinely within them, that this confidence. But I guess what you're saying is actually that's the vagal tone with which they look at the world.
I'm coming round to the idea that confidence is a lot about how people steward their nervous system.
Right.
Now, this is not my work. This is the work of a scientist called Stephen Porges. And there's a great book, which is a bit weighty, called The Polyvagal Theory.
Right.
But it's fascinating for parents generally, because polyvagal theory, how we show up for our children, is massive. If I have high vagal tone with my child, then I'm making them feel safe and at ease. The attachment is going to be good. So both for both parenting and work, this is something worth knowing about.
I love that. I love that idea. I think we need you at home as well as in the workplace. So you're just about to launch your new book, Find Your Voice. Could you explain for our listeners what you discuss in the book?
Well, there's a nice story actually for listeners with children, because my editor was in my NCT group in South London.
Really?
And she commissioned my last book, Gravitas, and then we met up about a year ago, and she said, "Do you want to write another book?" And I said, "Well, yes, actually I do." So Find Your Voice was born really out of the NCT, which I think we can all be happy with.
That's brilliant.
The book really was commissioned on the back of the TEDx I did, which has had 7 million views and rising.
Amazing.
Which is about the secret to speaking with confidence, and it's all about my learning about the, as we've talked about a little bit, the power of the voice in the body. And my belief that if you can have a chat to 3 people and feel relaxed and confident, you can stand on a stage in front of 3,000 people and enjoy the experience too. And most people will go, "Really?"
Yep.
But it's the same instrument. And it's my really firm belief that we should all learn how the voice works, because when you understand how it works, you can steward it. And I'm an introvert. The thought of standing on stage and having to perform is really anathema to me. But I've learned that every pause is a full stop where I can take a relaxed in-breath. And so as an introvert, I can be quiet on every full stop. I can have a moment of centeredness. And so that makes it possible to speak to big audiences, you know, for a living. Because it's not about a big show. It's just about having a chat.
One of the things I get when I have to do a big meeting or presentation, I get this awful wobbly voice. And in my head, I'm about to breathe. I'm about to speak and talk as I am to you here today. But what comes out is really something quite different. What can I do?
This is so normal. And this is exactly what the book deals with. Because the first rule is that all speech, all voice, certainly in English, is out-breath. So the quality of your in-breath is going to be the quality of your speech. And what I mean by that is that if we, which a lot of people do, gasp the breath in when they get nervous, and you hear the kind of and the that, and the chest moves when they speak, then that makes your system feel like it's running away or fighting. You go into fight or flight, essentially. Now, that's when the body says, "You don't need your voice right now, Jane. You just need to run away." And so it sends a whole load of adrenaline through the system, and that's when the voice wobbles. Now, we have to look after our nervous system like it's a, you know, a child or a small animal. We have to steward it and calm it down. And if you, before you speak, do something that centers you. Personally, I love yoga. Works for me. If I've got something that makes me feel nervous, I'll do 10, 15 minutes of yoga before I go there. That helps. And then before I speak, you know, often someone is introducing you or someone else is speaking, your heart rate can start to go, you start to worry about it. At that point, I do that feet on floor, bum on chair thing.
Right.
Come back to your senses. Keep the breathing low and slow. Feel the ribs moving out as you breathe in. Feel them move back together as you breathe out. As you walk out, in front of the panel, in front of the interview, on stage, just feel your feet on the floor, feel the air on your face. Get there in front of them. Breathe out. Imagine they're old friends. Wait for the breath in, low and slow and easy. Then speak. And if you do that, you cut the gasp. And so you say to the nervous system, it's okay, you're amongst friends. And that's when the real us shows up. And I just don't know why no one teaches this to us at school. Why did I not learn this when I was eight? Why did I get to my mid-30s
before I understood it? Because if you think about it, it's such an abnormal thing. There's no other place that I can think of in my life when I'm marched out as one person almost in front of, you know, what looks very much like a firing line, although you're saying imagine them as friends. But even as you're talking, I'm apologies to any listeners if you can hear me hyperventilating, because I'm trying to do the exercises as you say it, and it's it works, it really does.
I mean, the nervous system sees all those people and goes, this is scary. And so you just have to say, it's okay, which is what you would do, you know, for your child.
Yeah. Lots of lessons there.
We need to do it for ourselves too.
Lots of great lessons, yeah. I'd like to just have a quick chat about this idea of authenticity. And I think, again, as more women rise up, let's hope, in the, you know, senior ranks at work, we are seeing a different style. We don't all have, if you're not an Angela Merkel, and you know, it is becoming more acceptable to demonstrate some female traits in presentations and things like that. But still, it feels, when you think of the word gravitas, I think of pretty much an alpha male. What changes are you seeing? Are you seeing any changes there? Or how can we develop our own authentic style as women?
It's a really important question. And I do think it's changing. Is it changing fast enough? Personally, not for me. Mm. I still work with women who say, I'm the only woman in the boardroom. I'm heard. I was working with someone yesterday who works in defence, and she's often in the room with two-star generals, and she said, I don't feel heard.
Mm.
So it's changing, not fast enough, but we can, it's a bit cheesy, but we can be the change. Because if we teach others how to treat us, then the perception, the system starts to adjust. And so what I said to this client yesterday is, don't go in believing that they're not going to listen to you, because you've already set yourself up for failure, because your body language will show defensiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to walk in teaching them how to treat you. And if they're very task focused, very credibility focused in style, then you probably slightly have to play the game. You might sit up tall, you might hold yourself well, you might project your voice to the back of the room. There's loads in the book on that, by the way.
Right.
And you might speak slightly more slowly than normal. And the most important thing with that very high task, high credibility audience, which you do find in boardrooms still, is don't focus on relationship. Don't go in looking for relationship, because you're not going to get it. Focus on task.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
So when I'm with my, I think this is more true for women still than it is for men. When I'm with my friends, I'm kind of, it's the, wow, this old thing, you know, really, I mean, it's not that big, you know. It's what Deborah Tannen, who's a sociolinguist, calls one down.
Mm.
I don't want to make myself seem too arrogant, too big. So we're kind of, there's a language of playing ourselves down that I think women understand.
Yeah.
It doesn't read in that very formal corporate environment.
I see.
And so if I say, well, you know, maybe this would be a good idea if we, and perhaps I'm not sure if this is useful, and the tonality is be my friend and I'm not so important, doesn't read with that very high task audience. And women can be like that too.
Mm.
So I teach people a technique called brick in the wall, which is, if you imagine that you've got a brick in front of you, you pick up the brick. And as you, if we say the days of the week, as you say the days of the week, you say Monday, Tuesday, and on Wednesday, you put the brick in the wall, Wednesday, which is very different to saying Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay.
Monday, Tuesday, brick in the wall, Wednesday.
Right.
So go on. Sorry.
I was just going, for listeners who obviously can't see, Caroline is moving her hands as if she were holding a brick and putting it into a hole in the wall. I've seen that done. So it seems so obvious and so simple, but I have seen it done. I've seen it done with politicians and so on. You're absolutely right.
And you can do it as you're speaking just by pressing the air down with your hand. So, you know, Jane, this is really important. Mm. It can be on air pressure or it can be on gesture. But it just gives you what's called a downward intonation pattern, a resolved intonation pattern, which is like, here is the news.
Yeah.
Which says, fact, serious, listen to me.
Mm, absolutely. What I do is tend to wave my hands around like I look like I want to take off. So I'm going to take those tips and put them into action. That's fantastic. Thank you. I'm just coming to the end of the podcast. I've got three questions that I ask all my guests. The first one is, what has been the impact of having children on your career?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's been life-changing in the best way. Mm. It's made me softer, and at the same time, it's like a L'Oreal advert. It's made me stronger. It's made me so much more understanding, and it's given me a real drive. But what I would say to someone coming back from work is that I had to be quite kind to myself in the first few months coming back, because it took me a while to get back up to speed after both babies, and I think that's okay. That you're not going to be straight back, you're not going to kind of pop back to exactly how you were just before you left, you know, on mat leave. And so I would say each time I go off, it takes me about a year to get back up to full speed, and that's okay. It's
great.
Fine.
Great advice. And what would you say to a hiring manager who's just interviewed a woman he knows can do the job, but she's asked about flexible working policies at the firm?
I would say, what's not to like? Motherhood expands our brains. It makes us stronger, more empathetic, way more focused.
Yeah.
Give her the job. Give her the flexi time.
Yeah, brilliant. And finally, how can people find out more about you and your work?
There's a website, carolinegoida.com, and Find Your Voice. It will be on all good online bookstores and in shops after the 31st of January.
Amazing. And just to say thank you ever so much, Caroline, because she's also offering anyone who's listened to this podcast and who goes out and buys the book, take a copy or take a photo of the receipt, email it into info@gravitasmethod.com, and they will email you some audio guides to really ramp up your speaking and your voice skills. Thank you so much, Caroline. I've really enjoyed talking to you today.
My pleasure, Jane. Thank you.
What a great interview that was with Caroline today. I'm so pleased that she was able to make the time right before she launches her new book to come in and have a chat to us. My goodness, what a mine of information she is. We were able to talk about how to manage your voice, how to prepare for going back to work, how to gain control, and some really practical tools about what to do with your body and your mind before you open your mouth. Something I need to learn a little bit more. We also talked about whether there's a new female style creeping in and whether or not that's moving fast enough into the corporate world, but really how to engage with your audience before any kind of big meeting, whether that's talking to one person, three people, or 3,000. Thank you so much, Caroline. It was a great interview. Please don't forget to like and subscribe to the Careering into Motherhood podcast.